This is the voice of the Trumpet Magazine. News, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, the future. This is Trumpet Hour, the week in review.
Hello, this is Jeremiah Jacques, contributing editor of the Philadelphia Trumpet News Magazine. I'm filling in today for your regular host, Mr. Joel Hilliker. We appreciate you tuning into Trumpet Hour today, and our panel of trumpet writers has some important and prophetically significant stories rounded up today that they're eager to tell you all about. Here in the studio in Edmond, Oklahoma, we have Andrew Miller.
Hello.
And Anthony Chibadidwe.
Greetings, everyone.
Joining us from our office in the UK, we have Richard Palmer.
Good afternoon.
And from our office in Jerusalem, Brent Noctegal.
Greetings.
ISIS, or the Islamic State terrorist group, has lost much of its power over the last few years, and it doesn't make its way into the headlines nearly as often as it did a few years ago. But this week, a report came out of Kuwait showing that ISIS has recently seized a large shipment of weapons that were bound for another terrorist group. To tell us about this, we'll go to our man in the Middle East, Brent Noctegal.
Yeah, so this happened, I guess, about a week and a half ago, although it was just reported last week. And it was a shipment of arms that was sent from Iran en route to Hamas in the Gaza Strip. They rule over the Gaza Strip. But it was intercepted by Islamic State operating out of the Sinai Peninsula, one of their branches. I guess they've got branches in Africa, one in the Sinai, and then the Islamic State we hear most about is the Islamic State working in Syria and Iraq. And so this is the Islamic State that governs, is roaming in a large territory in the Sinai Peninsula. There's an ongoing battle with the Egyptian army that's trying to thwart the actions of Islamic State there. Well, Iran was trying to get some of these munitions, which include some of this precision-guided technology that we've talked about, how they are giving that to Hezbollah in southern Lebanon, just north of Israel. They're trying to give that technology to Hamas as well to make their rockets and missiles precision-guided. There were some of those GPS systems that were found amongst this cache. And also these Cornet missiles. These are really... They're mainly an anti-tank missile. They're incredibly sophisticated. And what's interesting about that is one of these was actually fired 2 weeks, three weeks ago now, from Hamas into a Israeli bus. People might have seen footage of this. It was captured by Hamas TV or Hamas cameras and just broadcast across the Middle East with Arabic music playing, showing them firing this Cornet missile and absolutely destroying this bus, which precipitated the Gaza war, basically, or the two-day war where you had the Hamas firing 400 rockets at Israel. That was a Cornet missile, and it's one of these missiles that can be guided. And so what we saw is Islamic State, they've got it. They say they don't want to give it up to Hamas. But what's important through this is it does show that similar weapons transfers like this have made their way to Hamas from Iran. And it shows that even now, Iran is still trying to arm its proxies, even as it tries to work with the Europeans to stay in the nuclear deal and plead its ignorance and say that it's just a normal actor like everybody else on the planet. Things like this show that not to be the case.
Yeah, that really surprises me in some ways that despite the economic pressure on Iran and despite a lot of suffering at home and a lot of citizens across the country protesting periodically because of the hardships they're suffering, largely because their government sends so much tax revenue to arm groups like Hamas and Hezbollah. But despite all of that, Iran stays the course, and it looks like they have no intention of curtailing the support of terrorist groups in the region.
It is surprising the way that we look at it, I'm sure. I mean, I don't think many in the Middle East are surprised. I don't think the Iranian people are surprised. This is what they've been doing. Even when we did have those really harsh sanctions or firm sanctions on the Iranian regime through 2011-12, 13, we still had $1 billion coming out of Iran's coffers and being sent to Hezbollah per year during that time. And so they've shown that one of the last places that they withdraw the funds from is its military, is the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, which is who directs these type of weapons transfers. The people don't see the money. Like, if we want to starve the Iranian nation of funds, the people are going to feel that first, and the military is going to feel that last.
Yeah, it really just shows what the national priority of the government there is. So Iran and Hamas have had a little bit of an on-again, off-again relationship over the last few years. Could you tell us a little bit about just what binds them together, why that binding doesn't always hold, and a little about what this weapons shipment that happened last week or was supposed to happen says about where they stand with each other today?
Right now, I think their relationship is strong. It's born out of a mutual desire for political Islam to govern the world, basically. And obviously, Hamas doesn't have the ability that Iran does to try and further that aim. But fundamental to both of their, well, secondary to that goal, or maybe not secondary, but similarly, they both share a desire to wipe out the Jews. This is a genocidal ambition. This is not over territory. Both Hamas and Iran have said as much. They come from rival factions, as far as ones in the Sunni camp, Hamas is, and Iran leads the Shiite camp. But Iran has said that it is willing to work with anyone that wants to further its own ambitions. The fact that they are trying to destroy Israel is very critical to both of these groups. Now, as far as these arms transfers, it does show that they are still working together. Bible prophecy actually indicates that while Hamas is going to continue in the Iranian camp for a long time, a number of the Palestinians are probably not going to follow Iran all the way to meet its destruction at the hands of the King of the North or a German-dominated Europe. There, it looks like towards the end that they are actually going to side with an alliance of Arab states on the other side of this. Nevertheless, there is a fundamental to their belief, and both of the alliances, whether it's the King of the South or the other Arab alliance, is a hatred of Israel. They both share that. So for now, Hamas is taking its money and funding from Iran, where it can get it from, and that may switch, but that's definitely not the case as we see it now.
You mentioned a little bit about the biblically prophetic context of this there. Would you be able to tell listeners where they might go to read more about these Bible prophecies?
Yeah, fundamentally, the thing that people need to read to get good background is our editor-in-chief's book, The King of the South. It goes through the prophecies referring to Iran and its hold over radical Islam and how that it does mobilize every asset that it has, monetary or even these proxy groups, to try and further its goals. And one of those goals is the eradication of the Jewish state, the taking over Jerusalem. And it is going to get, it is going to be partially successful in that. If people want to know about all those details, yeah, they need to request that book, King of the South.
Thank you for that, Brent. Well, it's no real secret that in Europe, anti-Semitism has never completely disappeared, but now the signs of it are becoming more and more visible. And there was a poll published this week showing just how prevalent these signs and indications are becoming. To tell us about this, we'll go to our man in Europe, Richard Palmer.
Yeah, so this week, CNN and ComRes, the pollster, they did a poll of 7,000 individuals across several different countries in Europe: France, Germany, Austria, Hungary, Poland, Sweden, and Great Britain, with 1,000 people from each one. So really quite a high quality, comprehensive poll. And they found some shocking results. One in four said that Jews have too much influence in conflict and wars across the world. One in five, they said, too much influence in politics. About the same number saying they had too much influence in the media. To anyone with any knowledge of history, these opinions are pretty shocking. These were exactly the type of opinions that were prevalent around the 1930s. These beliefs that the world was controlled by some shadowy conspiracy of Jews, that financiers were Jews, that Jews were kind of secretly causing wars in order to profit for themselves. So exactly those same kind of views. And the report gave us one contributing factor as to why this is so common is they found that a third of Europeans in the polls said that they know little or nothing about the Holocaust, which, again, that's that kind of level of ignorance is really surprising. And so if people are, they don't know this history, they don't know where that led before, they don't know how bogus these reports were and these rumors and those kind of conspiracy theorist beliefs were, then that's a good chunk of the reason why they're falling for those kind of conspiracy theories all over again.
Yeah, we've often heard from Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury just how crucial it is for people to be studying and learning history. And this shows us one of the huge pitfalls that can happen from, you know, the absence of any sort of historic understanding. Given that history that you mentioned about the 1930s, do you know if this increasing anti-Semitism that we're seeing in Europe today has had any bearing on immigration patterns for modern Jews in Europe today? Or is it prompting many of them to leave for countries where they feel more welcome?
Well, certainly France, there's been a few reports over the last few years showing that there's a lot of French migration into Israel has increased. There's a lot of people moving out of there. I mean, we have seen practical effects of anti-Semitism already in Europe. I think the New York Times had an article yesterday that they began, I thought, in a very effective way, where they just began by listing some cities: Paris, Toulouse, Malmo, Copenhagen, Brussels, Berlin. For most people, these are lovely cities where you might happily take a holiday home. But for the world's Jews, they are something else too. They are place names of hate. And all those cities are cities where there have been major attacks against Jews. Now, those attacks have largely been committed by radical Muslims, and they are certainly some of the ones that hold the most anti-Semitic views. But there have been numerous studies as well that have shown that this is not just radical Islam. I mean, if you look at, say, the Muslim population of a lot of these countries, it's at its highest a few percent, whereas we've already seen these opinions go way higher than that. So there's a combination of radical Muslims and then a more mainstream opinion that's not radical Islam that looks at those attacks and says they deserved it. And that was one of the opinions. 1 in 5, according to this study, said that most anti-Semitism is a response to the behavior of the Jews. And so they see these Muslim attacks. They don't really do much about it because they say, well, you know, it's their fault.
Richard, would you be able to put this in the context of Bible prophecy for us and then just also point listeners to where they could go to learn more about the significance of these trends?
So one of the reasons we've drawn attention to watching this trend is it's a good barometer of world events. Trumpet.com managing editor Brad McDonald has drawn attention to the way that it's functioned like this before. He had an article titled Anti-Semitism, Why You Should Be Alarmed. And he just went through just the history and showed how often this has come up at times of when extremism is thriving. And World War II is the classic example of that, but not the only one. There's 2,000 years of history of anti-Semitism within Europe. But there is a lot of reason to be concerned about this, even so just with that history. But then the Bible does talk about a time where anti-Semitism is coming. The Bible talks about, first of all, that the Jews have been committed the oracles of God. You know, they help preserve the Old Testament, and there's a lot of wrath directed against them because they've just been so fundamental in preserving what God wrote down. There is a devil, and he does hate God's truth, and so much of the preservation of that truth has happened because of the Jews, and so there's a certain level of hate directed at them because of that. And you look at some of these prophecies that we talk about on this show pretty regularly, and you see that same type of hatred expressed. So, for example, the Psalm 83 alliance, we end up talking about that quite a bit on the show, this prophecy about European nations allying with Middle Eastern nations. And right at the start of that prophecy, it says that they want to just wipe out the name of Israel so that it's no longer in remembrance. That's the purpose of that alliance. They want to wipe out Israel. And like we emphasize on this show, Israel is not just the Jews, but it does include the Jews. There is that hatred of anti-Semitism included there, and prophecies like Psalm 89 show us that that's going to rise. You can look at some of these other prophecies where it talks about the rise of an authoritarian European power. And throughout history, whenever you've had an authoritarian European power, it's always been anti-Semitic. And then the Bible goes on to talk about how this power will attack the Middle East, will attack Israel. And so something like the rise of anti-Semitism, it's easy to see it, think of it as, well, I'm not a Jew, it's not so important for me. So much of Bible prophecy revolves around that European power attacking Israel. So actually, the rise in anti-Semitism is a really important trend to watch, and it's right at the heart of so many of these other prophecies that we discuss on this show. So that's just a summary of some of the points Mr. McDonald makes in his article where he talks about this anti-Semitism, why you should be alarmed. Because this is something that is going to affect all of us, Jew or not. So it's worth reading and going over what the Bible says about this problem in that article.
Okay, well, thanks, Richard. And we'll be sure to have a link to that article in the show notes for today's program. In Taiwan, the ruling party, which is the independence-leaning Democratic Progressive Party, has just been dealt a brutal blow in elections. They've suffered a historic defeat in local elections, and the president has resigned as party leader. So it's quite a shakeup there in a nation that is one of America's most important Asian partners. And evidence is now emerging that China played a significant role in this Taiwanese election. To tell us about this, we'll go to Anthony Chibadidwe.
Taiwan has been hit by what analysts are describing as a political earthquake following last weekend's midterm elections for various government positions in Taiwan. The ruling party there, as you said, is called the Democratic Progressive Party. It's pro-American, as you said. It's pro-independence, which means it's anti-China for the most part. And it was humiliated in those elections. The party had framed the elections as a vote between freedom or a Chinese takeover, but it lost more than half of the cities and the counties that it held. The Taiwanese president, who was the head of the party, as you said, resigned following the outcome of that election. She took complete responsibility for that outcome. And she has been the president. She's still the president of Taiwan, and she'll continue to be the president of Taiwan theoretically until the next presidential elections. But right now, her position is maybe quite similar to Angela Merkel in Germany. But the big winner in this party, in these elections, was the former ruling party, which won 15 out of 22 cities and counties in Taiwan. But the biggest winner is China. Because the former ruling party is pro-China. Now, just here's a quick background about these midterm elections in China. In a sense, they are quite similar to the midterm elections here in the United States. They serve sort of like a referendum for the policies of the Taiwanese government. And the last time Taiwan held such elections was in 2014. And the outcome from those elections was a resounding defeat for the pro-China movement in Taiwan and a resounding victory for the pro-independence movement in Taiwan. And 2 years later, Taiwan elected the pro-independence president Tsai Ing-wen. Now, since then, relations between Taiwan and mainland China have deteriorated. Taiwan shifted more towards the United States, and China exerted a lot of social, economic, and political pressure just to try to force Taiwan into its orbit and to try to establish this one China policy. Now, that pressure was certainly evident even in these elections. Reports say that last weekend's elections in Taiwan were overshadowed by an extensive Chinese interference campaign. The World Politics Review, it wrote this yesterday, quote, "The elections were notable for the degree of Chinese interference. Meddling for mainland China is nothing new, but analysts note that Chinese efforts to influence electoral outcomes in Taiwan have become more expansive and sophisticated. In contrast to the blunt threats and saber-rattling of the past years, Beijing has worked quietly to develop a keen understanding of Taiwanese political dynamics, openly supporting disenchanted community groups in the island's neglected rural areas, and quietly routing funds to preferred politicians through Taiwanese businesses based in China. And the article goes on to show China's involvement and influence through social media, disinformation, and it even resulted in the suicide of one politician in Taiwan there. So it has been trying to impact this election, and it really worked just based on the results that we saw. Some people might feel like, well, this wasn't really a Chinese victory. People were in Taiwan were more concerned about the economy, but that's exactly what China wanted. It's been placing a lot of economic pressure on Taiwan, a lot of diplomatic pressure and military pressure as well, forcing nations to cut ties with Taiwan and its military drills right there in the waters off Taiwan. And there are many other ways China has been trying to influence these elections, like even limiting Chinese tourists into Taiwan and encouraging Taiwanese people to come into China to study in China, just as a way to just divide public sentiment. So China has actually scored a major victory here. And the other concern is that it just emboldens China a whole lot more. It shows China that, hey, this works. We just have to keep doing it. And these midterm elections are considered like a pattern of what's likely going to happen in the presidential elections in 2 weeks' time. So China is just going to continue doing more of the same. So that's what we can expect from China.
So it looks like Taiwan could really be headed toward a period of much greater submission to China, thanks largely to China's pressure and influence. What would you say this could mean for the relationship between Taiwan and the U.S.?
Well, for years we've been talking about that. Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury had an article from way back in 1998. It's titled Taiwan Betrayal, and it basically just uses Bible prophecy to show that relations with China between United States and Taiwan are bound to deteriorate because China is prophesied to dominate that part of the region, dominate its satellite nations, you could call them. And just based on that, we have expected for years that Taiwan is going to shift away from the United States and shift closer to China. So that's what we can expect from Bible prophecy in the near future based on Bible prophecy. We've been talking about that for a long time. And we've been talking about this trend of China just becoming this strong power in that region. We have a trend article that we'd like to point our listeners to, and it's titled Why the Trumpet Watches the Rise of China as a Superpower. Another piece of literature that our listeners can read is Russia and China in Prophecy, and it just talks about these prophecies in greater detail, prophecies that show the rise of China, how strong-willed it's prophesied to be, and how it's going to unite many nations in that region in Asia.
Well, thanks very much for that, Anthony. You're listening to Trumpet Hour, our week in review program on 101.3 KPCG. And most of the stories that we're discussing today are up on our website, thetrumpet.com, or they'll be published there soon if they're not yet. So please visit thetrumpet.com to get more information on these important stories. In just a moment, we'll take a short break, but first we'll discuss one more story about one of the most contentious and heated topics of the day, the climate change debate. For the latest on this, we'll go to trumpet writer Andrew Miller.
Yeah, anyone who's been listening to this show for any period of time knows that extreme weather disasters come up in our discussions often. We've talked about record-breaking fires in California. We've talked about various hurricanes, numerous hurricanes over the past couple of years that have hit parts of the United States. And a new report released by the United States Global Climate Change Program highlights many of these same natural disasters and attributes them to climate change. Now, granted, I mean, there's a difference between climate and weather, but anytime you have an increase in natural disasters, that is a change in your environment or a climate change. Mm-hmm. But when they're talking this phrase climate change, they're specifically talking about global warming created by the burning of fossil fuels, increasing greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. The United States government released a 477-page document on this topic. It came out November 23rd. Pretty contentious in that it was actually, I mean, it's released by the U.S. government, even though President Trump and some White House spokes officials have, who run aforesaid government, have distanced themselves from it. Mm. But the interesting angle we have in this program is obviously from the standpoint of Bible prophecy. There's numerous prophecies in the Bible about natural disasters that occurred just before Christ's return, mm-hmm. that are sent by God for two reasons. One, to correct people for their sins. And two, as like a sign that Christ's return is imminent. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that you get all this reports, all this, I guess, growing consensus that this isn't a sign of the end time, this isn't correction for moral sins. This is just the result of burning too much fossil fuels. But the thing is, when you look into that, I mean, this science is particularly biased, and there are a number of very brilliant scientists who are starting to realize that as well. And so that's kind of what I'm talking about here. Is there's a report, we'll have it online sometime soon, from the Heartland Institute. That's a free market institute. But it gave like a 54-page rebuttal of the climate change report that was I found utterly fascinating. Hmm. In that it talks about like the models, these computer models. Computer models are the main way that these climate change scientists for the government make their end of the world global warming forecast. Yeah. But they said they ignore the fact that the warming effect that carbon dioxide does have on the atmosphere is not linear. Specifically, the first 20 parts per million of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere has as much effect as the next 400 parts per million. Hmm. So they're saying, it's like by the time you're up above 200, 300 parts per million in the atmosphere, you've almost maxed out the insulating effect of the carbon, and actually putting more carbon in the atmosphere is going to have a little effect, but not nearly the effect that most computer models predict it will have.
And so the original 477-page report seemed ignorant of that?
Yeah, the models, that report relied on other reports from the United Nations Climate Change Panel, mm-hmm. and the computer models that those scientists do were I don't know if they were ignorant of it, but they didn't put that calculation in the simulation.
I see.
It also ignored some of the, I guess what you'd call in science, negative feedback loops that God has designed into the planet to control carbon from getting levels too high. In the effect that it's been noted that many parts of the Australian outback, the African desert, are actually starting to have an increase in plant growth. So some plants that don't know grow there because plants need carbon. And if carbon in the atmosphere increases, more plants grow. Plants also use carbon in their metabolism process. So as the carbon increases, the plant levels increase. Right. As the plant levels increase, the carbon levels decrease. And the entire system restabilizes and gets pulled at least back towards the equilibrium point. Something scientists, the most botanists, understand. It's not in the computer models, which that's one of the reasons that you keep seeing all these. If you've been following the global warming hype for a long time, you'll see like, oh, we've got 5 years, like oh, another 5 years, like another 5 years. You never actually get to the worst case scenario because the planet's designed to balance these things out.
Well, Andrew has written an article called The National Climate Assessment is Junk Science. We'll have a link to that in the show notes for today's program. We'll also have a link to our free booklet, Why Natural Disasters, which explains the biblically prophetic significance of a lot of the weather disasters that we're seeing at an increased frequency. So please take a look at those if you've not read them yet. Thanks very much for that, Andrew. You're listening to Trumpet Hour here on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial, and the live stream is available anywhere in the world if you just type kpcg.fm into your internet browser. Coming up, we'll talk about the European Union taking steps toward building a military, the game-changing relationship between Russia and China, the resurgence of a highly contagious respiratory disease, and a fascinating archaeological discovery in Israel. We'll be back in a moment.
You're listening to Trumpet Hour, the Week in Review.
This is Jeremiah Jacques filling in for your regular host, Mr. Joel Hilliker. The European Union has been a formidable economic and political force for decades, and now the defense industry for the various nations are also increasingly working together to make the EU a military power. To bring us up to speed on the latest developments on this front, we'll go once again to Richard Palmer.
Yes, Handelsblatt reported on this article, on the subject, with an article a few days ago, titled "Thanks to Brexit, the European Army is on its way." And we've had a lot of rhetoric over the last few weeks about a European army, some very dramatic rhetoric with French President Emmanuel Macron saying, well, we need a European army to defend ourselves against Russia, China, and America. And we've seen Angela Merkel come out and say, yep, she agrees. We've seen all the other German chancellor candidates or to replace Merkel say they agree. And it's important to note that we're also seeing practical steps towards that as well. This is not just nice sounding words or even not nice sounding words from these European leaders. And so this Handelsblatt article focused on that. And well, it said Brexit may have been sad, but it has one positive outcome for the other 27 nations in the European Union. It has brought them closer together politically. There may soon be another sector that can celebrate more togetherness thanks to the British decision to leave the European Union, the defense industry. And this particular piece of news that prompted this was a not hugely publicized agreement between France and Germany and the Netherlands to start sharing to start pooling their different military industries. You know, this has always been a big obstacle for Europe working together as a military or in a military union. You know, Germans want to use German-made tanks. French want to use French-made tanks. Dutch want to use Dutch-made tanks. Italians want to use Italian-made tanks, and so on. And so you end up with this area that has a military budget and size comparable to the United States, but it's all kind of its effectiveness is reduced because it's split so many different ways. This less publicized agreement shows them these companies starting to work together in very practical ways. So some of the big German companies, Rheinmetall, some of the big Dutch and French arms companies, they're going to work together on a new ground combat system and a new tank. And this tank, when it's completed, a lot of analysts are already saying it's probably going to be the best tank in the world. The Leopard 2 tank, in its most upgraded version, is currently regarded as one of the best out there, and so they'll be building on that expertise. And then the French and the Germans are working together on a new air system. And so Handelsblatt wrote, the announcement may have been mild-mannered, but in fact it can be seen as an important de facto declaration of intent via the biggest defense contracts in the EU. The resulting contracts could see the individual companies turn over in hundreds of billions by 2040. You know, they're hundreds of billions-sized contracts. And the deal at the moment basically looks like Germany gets to take charge of building up the ground forces, and then the French defense companies are going to take charge of building up the air forces. They'll split it up that way rather than everybody having their own little weapon system.
Do you have a read on the time frame for when these steps would be put into practice?
Well, as they are right now, they are being talked about in much more long range. they are being talked about, say, 2040s-ish. Currently in weapons development, that's the kind of time frame that gets thought. I mean, the Leopard 2 tank has been around for decades. And so they are long-range plans. I think the air plan might be a little sooner. Germany's got a bit of urgency there. A whole range of their current air force is about to become obsolete. They need an upgrade fairly quickly. The only one that's really on the table that will do the job is the American F-35. They may go that route, but they prefer to build their own, and they've talked a lot about doing that just even more over the last few weeks. So these are more long-range plans, but Russia very rapidly developed their new tank, and that has injected a bit more urgency into European countries to come up with a counter, because at the moment that new Russian tank is really the only tank of its kind of, or the only next generation tank in existence around the world. So at the moment, more long range, but it's not hard to see that speeding up.
Could you put this news about the EU military in the context of Bible prophecy for us, and also just let listeners know what literature they could order to understand more about it?
Sure. So, one of the key scriptures that we talk about a lot of the time when we're talking about Europe and this united power is Revelation chapter 17. It's one that is pretty easy to prove what it's talking about. It's talking about a sequence of different empires that rise up in the same territory, influenced by the same church. And we've seen that in Europe, where you've had a whole number of Catholic-influenced empires rise and fall one after the other. And one of the big things it says is that in the next instance of this empire, it's going to be made up of 10 kings, 10 different leaders of 10 different nations or groups of nations. And it says that these give their strength and power to one unified whole. And it's because of this prophecy that right in 1945, as soon as World War II was over, as soon as Germany was defeated, Herbert W. Armstrong said, that was one resurrection of this empire in Europe. The Bible said it would fall. The Bible says that there's going to be one more that's going to rise. It's going to be a union of 10 kings, so it's going to come apart through some kind of European union. And he used the literal term European union. He was doing so based on that prophecy, and very quickly he began talking about, well, it's going to have a unified military power because of those scriptures that say they'll give their strength and power to the beast. He talked about this consistently, a unified military power. And so when we see this happening, it's a direct fulfillment of those prophecies in the Bible and something Herbert W. Armstrong forecast a long time ago. And in terms of what to look at to get the details, much more details on this news, Joshua Michels has written an article, Europe's Next Generation Combat System, on our website, where he does get into some of those just really interesting, at least if you kind of like things that explode like me, really interesting details into these different weapon systems and how they are working together, with even some glossy promotional videos and pictures and things exploding, tests of them. But then to get the real substance of what the Bible says and to prove that, then our free book, The Holy Roman Empire and Prophecy, is just a great place to start. It will show you those prophecies, show you how they have been fulfilled in history, and show you what's coming in Europe.
We'll be sure to have a link to Josue's article with all the explosions and also The Holy Roman Empire and Prophecy in the show notes. Thanks very much for that, Richard. Well, here on the Trumpet Hour, we often discuss the relationship between Russia and China and just how close and intimate these two nations are becoming. And this week, the National Interest published a powerful article on this topic showing just how much this relationship is beginning to impact the world. To tell us about this, we'll go once again to Anthony.
Yeah, it can be very easy for anyone to take for granted these growing ties between Russia and China, but apparently there are a few analysts out there who, like us, have been saying that we shouldn't take this lightly. We should focus on this relationship because it's a relationship that will dramatically change Northeast Asia. The National Interest said the title of that article was Russia's Relationship with China Will Change Northeast Asia. Right off the bat, it started off by saying that many naysayers on the China-Russia partnership may want to take another look at this. For decades, it's been quite common to suggest that this bilateral linkage is either negligible or highly problematic. But it says that despite the challenges that still exist between the two nations, it would be a major mistake to overlook the impressive growth trajectory that is apparent in the Russia-China bilateral relationships. It talks about those challenges that might cause people to not think too much about it. It talks about limited transportation links. It talks about how the military cooperation might just seem to be merely symbolic. And it talks about the nasty history between the two countries in the late 60s. But it also says that these things are changing a lot, is particularly with trade relations. It talks about how much China's northeast region is developing a lot of linkages with the Russian Far East. It says that a lot of these plans had been outlined back in 2012, and it's saying that those investments are now coming online. It talks about efforts to open up a number of crisscrossing trade corridors connecting northeast China and the Russian Far East, and it says that they have the potential to yield up a transformative impact for the whole region. And it talks about new bridges that are nearing completion, railway links between the two regions, which will be the first time ever that they have existed. It also mentioned significant trade routes connecting these two regions. One has been dubbed Coastal 1 and another has been dubbed Coastal 2. And it says that these two corridors will encompass the modernization of systems of highways, railways, ports, airports, border crossings, and communications, along with simplified procedures and lower custom duties. It talks about the oil dependence that these, particularly China, has with regards to Russian oil. In fact, just yesterday, there was a Russian-Chinese energy forum in Beijing, and Vladimir Putin said that the relationship between Russia and China is on the rise. There's one article that commented on it and just said that a lot of the reasons for this relationship is because of the sanctions that have been slapped on Russia. It's forcing Russia to build stronger ties with China. And so we're seeing a lot of this cooperation continuing and developing. And the article in the National Interest said that the more this partnership develops, the more it's growing more into a military cooperation between these two countries. So this is something that resonates with the message that we have been producing here at thetrumpet.com and at kpcg.fm about this growing relationship between Russia and China. We have a trend article that's titled "Why the Trumpet Watches Russia Allying with China," and it shows the biblical prophecies that talk about these two nations, how they are bound to improve ties and grow, especially militarily, because the Bible talks about this two nation leading this Asian superpower that has a powerful military. And right now we're seeing a lot more people warning about it and saying that this is bigger than what most people might realize.
We'll be sure to include a link to Why the Trumpet Watches Russia Allying with China. Really appreciate you bringing us up to speed on that, Anthony. Well, Russia has also been in the news this week for another reason, alongside Germany and Venezuela, because all three countries have recently had their measles elimination certificates revoked. The highly contagious disease looks like it's making a comeback. And to tell us about this, we'll go once again to Andrew.
Measles cases have jumped worldwide by more than 30% last year. As you mentioned, it's notably Germany, Russia, and Venezuela have had big increases, although the increase has been in many nations around the world, generally for a variety of different reasons. In Latin America, the Venezuela case is kind of like an epicenter of this, just because with the socialist meltdown of their country, their healthcare system has collapsed, which has led to a spike in measles outbreaks. And then with their refugee crisis, with 10% of their population by most estimates having fled the country, spreading that to other places, meaning that by the end of the year, they had diagnosed over 173,000 cases of measles. Like I said, that's a 30% jump from the year before. And now, to put it in perspective, the measles cases have been in a downward trend for a long time. They actually had 850,000 cases just 2 decades ago, or almost 2 decades ago in 2000. So it's come down in the past 2 decades from 850,000 to only 173,000. Until just this last year, though, where you've got, I mean, a 30% jump, which is a big jump.
Yes.
Which is a big jump and significant in light of Bible prophecy, is this is something that we've written a lot about on the Philadelphia Trumpet. Doesn't necessarily come up on the Trumpet Hour as much, but we have a free booklet you can order entitled The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, which goes through, they're very famous. Everyone's seen some picture or artist rendition of these four horsemen, but they're from the book of Revelation in chapter 6, where it talks about these four horsemen. The first one, the white one, which represents religious deception. The second one is red, which represents war. The third one's black, which represents famine. You just wrote an article recently on the black horsemen. And then the last one is, oh, it's pale or greenish. It uses the Greek word chloro, from where you get from chlorophyll. Hmm. So pale, greenish, sickly, which represents disease. And these four things, like religious deception, war, famine, and disease, are heralds of the of Christ's return, as the booklet explains. And so we keep a close eye on things like disease epidemics of that. It is something that has been with us for all of human history. Still as a herald that Christ is going to be coming back, but it is to intensify as the day gets closer and closer. And this measles uptick is definitely a big 30% intensification in the diseases that pale horseman represents.
Yeah, something for us to keep a close eye on for sure, and we'll make sure that we include a link to the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse booklet in the show notes as well. Thanks very much for that, Andrew. Well, this was a big week for those interested in biblical archaeology and the way discoveries happening right now are continuing to prove the ancient scriptures true. To tell us about a big find in the West Bank, we'll go once again to our Jerusalem office and Brent Noctegal.
Yeah, it is interesting how you set that up, because you mentioned it was found in the West Bank. Depending on which source you read, Haaretz wrote about this, and Haaretz, and they're more of a left-leaning paper over here, and so they wanted to bring out the fact that it was in the West Bank. But beside the fact of that, we are talking about this really stunning discovery of a metal ring with a signet on it. And this was from 2,000 years ago. That's how it's dated, 2,000 years ago. It was actually unearthed about 50 years ago in Herodian. And this is the site that one of the sites of Herod the Great, who ruled at Jesus Christ's birth, which he constructed, but then was used throughout the next 100 years. And this ring actually bears the name of Pilate. Obviously, people that understand have read the scriptures, Pilate is a key figure. He is a Roman governor or prefect that rules Judea, which is a Roman province at this time. During the time of Jesus Christ's life, at the end of his life, he ruled this territory from 26 to 36 AD. And right smack dab in the middle of that is the time that Jesus Christ was put to death. The Gospels all talk about Pontius Pilate being the one that had the authority to put Jesus Christ to death. And here we have a ring that, although it's not 100% because it only just says Pilate on it, it does seem that since Pilate is such a very rare name and it dates to the right time period as well, that this very well could be the Pilate of the Bible. Now, we have had another artifact that was unearthed 50 years ago as well. Oh, no, not 50 years ago, a little bit less than that. On the coast in Caesarea, I was just at Caesarea last week, and there is a replica of this inscription that does mention how the prefect of Judea is Pontius Pilatus, or Pontius Pilate as we know him as. And so this is just another proof of this historical figure coming to life, a historical figure that had the authority and did go through with it at putting Jesus Christ to death.
Wow. Well, this is, it's really exciting to see what is very likely just a little bit more concrete proof confirming the historicity there of the Gospels. Could you tell the listeners about what literature you might recommend for anyone who'd like to better understand the relationship between modern archaeology and the biblical scriptures?
Certainly, I think a booklet that people could request is Archaeology Thunders, Behold Your God. It's by our editor-in-chief. They could also go to our sister website, watchjerusalem.co.il. We have a lot of archaeological articles there. Most of the articles on that website are going to be more from the Old Testament, Old Testament-based. This is obviously a New Testament find. But nevertheless, what we are seeing right now is just the increase or of the frequency of discoveries that are bringing the Bible back to life. This is a modern science, archaeology. And so we're only right now really... scratching the surface is a bit of a pun, I guess, but we're starting to see just how fast these biblical finds are coming to the surface because of such deep engagement in archaeology now in the Holy Land. But they can go to watchjerusalem.co.il and read up about all of these significant finds of late.
Thank you, Brent. This is Trumpet Hour on Trumpet Radio 101.3. Remember, you can find us online at thetrumpet.com. Please visit us there to read more about the stories that we're discussing today and to subscribe to our print edition and also our news brief that we send out several times each week, the Trumpet Brief. Tell us what you think about the program today by emailing us at letters@thetrumpet.com. Thanks to our panel today, Andrew Miller, Anthony Chibadidwe, Richard Palmer, and Brent Noctegal.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me.
Have a great weekend.
Have a good weekend.
Thanks also to our technical staff, Dwight Falk and Josh Sloan, and we'll leave you today with some words from Abraham Maslow. A musician must make music, an artist must paint, and a poet must write if he is to be ultimately at peace with himself. What one can be, he must be. Thank you for joining us on Trumpet Hour. It's been a pleasure. Until next time, keep watching your world.
Listening to Trumpet Hour on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. Understand your world.